Russian pianist Daniil Trifonov has always wanted to spend more time with the music of Bach. He started to immerse himself into that world before the pandemic. Then when concerts were canceled and his calendar opened up, he suddenly was blessed with the gift of time, and he dove headfirst into the world of Johann Sebastian Bach. His music, his family life, what it was to just be a human as Johann Sebastian Bach. The recording is called Bach, The Art of Life, featuring Russian pianist Daniil Trifonov, and that's what you're going to hear about this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Elmacher. Why did you decide to create your latest 2-CD project, which is called Bach, The Art of Life?
Well, I always wanted to study more music of Bach. I always would sometimes include some works of Bach or transcriptions in my repertoire, but I never had a large-scale work of Bach. And one of the reasons my former teacher in Moscow, Tatiana Zelikman, she wanted me to move to Cleveland to study with Sergei Babayan, because Sergei Babayan has a very big experience with music of Bach, and he actually studied Bach with Helmut Rilling in Germany. And my former teacher actually wanted me to study music of Bach with Sergei Babayan, but it happened that the majority of music I was studying at Cleveland Institute of Music was actually not Bach. It would be, well, Chopin for a Chopin competition, and then a lot of our romantic repertoire. But finally, I was very happy that it was still before pandemic, so I could still play for him. I started learning it about a year before the pandemic started. This piece requires quite a lot of time spent on it. So after that, I had lessons with him on that piece, and it was very insightful. And after that, I started already playing it on recitals. And then pandemics, I was supposed to play in Kansas City, and I was ready to go to the hall. I already had my suit on, and then they said that everything is called off. And that was the day when everything in the entire country stopped. So everything was canceled. And then I had a lot of time to delve again deep into that piece for another year, basically, almost a year, and then I recorded it.
How does The Art of Fugue, that late masterpiece by Bach, reflect the life of this composer?
I think that actually, despite the fact that there are so many scientific gravitation points in that piece, there is also so much humanity and emotion in this music. And that's, I think, something that is very interesting about Bach himself, is that even if we compare to his music to the music that was music in a polyphonic style before him, he brings so much emotionality in a very strict form that is, in a way, I don't want to say that there is anything romantic, but this certain way with expressing more sensitive parts of humanity is something that maybe paved the way and started the seeds of later developments in music, as we can see with his sons, especially. The music of his sons is, many of them, is extremely emotional. And he, of course, took great interest in educating them. And for example, Anna Magdalena book was seen as studying material for his children, and it was a collection of music from different composers, from Bach himself, from some of his sons. And it's interesting to see what was the interest of a family.
You treat this cycle of pieces as a living organic whole, and you take your inspiration from nature. Can you talk about how the tree is a good metaphor for Bach's The Art of Fugue?
Well, that's actually, when I was studying the Art of Fugue, and of course I had a lot of reading as well, and one of my favorite books I was reading at the time was from Gardiner's, a great conductor, the book Music in the Castle of Heaven, which is very insightful. And one of the things that was interesting to me there is that for the church, in fact, at that time, the polyphonic music was considered in a way to be a proof of God because the incredible logics behind it and how all these different voices work in harmony and the sole possibility of polyphonic music, that it is possible for sounds to be arranged in such a way, was seen as a miraculous and something that's almost like as if humanity was tapping into understanding of something greater. That was a concept also found with some other things like mathematics or different patterns in nature. Actually, when talking about mathematics also, Art of Fugue explores that as well. He added it in the second iteration because there was an earlier version, even less complete than the one we have. It was done around 1742, and it's this earlier version is in the Berlin Library, and it has completely different order of pieces. It has two less canons, two less fugues. It has also different endings, different beginnings for different fugues. So it seemed more like a work in process, but it's nevertheless actual manuscript. So perhaps he was not completely satisfied with that. And so he kept working on it and he kept adding more things and rearranging material. And the Fibonacci structure, which is in the final version of Art of Fugue, is very interesting in terms of structure. And what is interesting about it is that it's actually not in the first edition, because I've calculated for both editions what is the difference. And actually, the first edition does not follow Fibonacci number at all. It's simply that there was no this plan. And it means that he actually rearranged pieces on purpose and changed their lengths in some cases, in order to fit into that Fibonacci structure later for the second edition, which is quite interesting.
Was married twice, and his Chaconne in D minor, originally scored for violin, is thought to be written in response to the death of his first wife, Maria Barbara. The transcription you play is by Brahms. What is special about this?
Well, there are two famous transcriptions for this piece, one by Busoni and one by Brahms. They both are great transcriptions, but I especially like Brahms' transcription is because it is so close to the original in many ways, because he only uses left hand, and so there are very few things that are actually different from the violin version. And just because he's using that left hand, it feels as if almost as a violinist left hand, because on a violin one has to reach for the intervals, and it's also that this reaching for intervals is present in this piano transcription. It just feels, in that sense, quite authentic to the original in the way it is performed.
You also feature selections from the notebook of his second wife, Anna Magdalena. ¶¶ What pieces did you choose and why?
That order of the pieces in that collection is not related in any way the way they are. It's not really a cycle in the common sense, because there is no tonal relationship between pieces or anything like that. But I wanted to still make a little bit of a cycle of it and have a selection of works that I find particularly interesting or even surprising for the time. I just arranged them in a certain tonal progression, so it will be as a mini cycle.
What did you find that was surprising that you included?
Well, many of the works are not actually what we expect from music of Bach, and some works we still don't know whether they were really by Bach or by other composers, and some of these discoveries were fairly recent. For example, the Bis Dubi Emir, which is the last one in the cycle I made, where it was for many years thought to be by Bach, but actually in early 2000s, they were doing a catalog of music of Stolzel, and they discovered, I believe, 5 or 6 arias from his opera. And the opera was, I believe, called Diomedes. We don't have a score for entire opera, it didn't survive, but Bis Dubi Emir was one of the arias from the opera that survived. In the opera itself, it very likely was a love song, so I think it's quite special that Bach would include this piece in a collection dedicated to his wife.
It's interesting because what we're learning is that not only was Bach one of the greatest composers of all time, but he was an ordinary person. He fell in love, he was a family man, and this was all very intentional on your part, right?
Well, yeah, actually, I've had a very interesting discussion with one of the people who run the Bach Museum in Leipzig, and they, not so long ago, they discovered financial papers that it turns out that Bach even owned stakes in a coal mine in West Germany. That was a surprise to many, many people, and it's something that we don't associate necessarily Bach with, owning stakes in a coal mine. So yeah, he was a human being, and I think that only makes him even more remarkable composer.
You also conclude your program with a gorgeous transcription of Jesu Joy of Man's Desiring. Can you talk about this transcription and why you chose to include it?
Well, it's a beautiful transcription and by Mayra Hess, and it's, of course, one of the beloved pieces of Bach. And actually, this piece was added when I was playing After the Fugue cycle for my teacher, Sergei Babayan, and back then, I just thought to play an entire Art of Fugue without anything else, and it was actually he suggested to have Chaconne and to something to begin with to kind of guide the listener into, so it's not complex fugue right away, and then also something in the end to close the cycle.
In putting this compilation together, what did you discover about yourself?
Well, it was such a great time to delve into music of Bach. The thing with Bach, actually, is that it's much easier to practice Bach for many hours than some other music, because it is so harmonious and everything makes sense. Even the most complex polyphony still makes sense. Time goes by much faster, and so It was great just to spend so much time with this music.
A new 2-CD set celebrating the life and the loves of Bach. It's called Bach, The Art of Life, with Russian pianist Daniil Trifonov. Thanks to Valerie Kaler, our producer of this podcast. And since you clearly love music, you also might want to check out the Piano Puzzler podcast with host Fred Child. He invites composer Bruce Adolph into the studio to play one of his brilliant musical mind games. That's where Bruce takes a familiar tune and disguises it in the style of a classical composer, and a contestant has to solve the riddle. You can subscribe to The Piano Puzzler wherever you get your podcasts. If you're enjoying new classical tracks from American Public Media, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it, help spread the word, and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. I'm Julie Amacher.